Welcome back. Second hour of We the People Radio. You can find all the information about the program, sponsorship, tons of archives, years of archives, at wethepeopleradio.us. And not just the sound files for archive, but a lot of printed material. So we put as much as our guests send to us and as much as we can research online. So let's see. I wanted to let folks know before we started the second hour, we have Lord Monckton will be in the Bay Area on Wednesday and Thursday of this week, so the 7th and the 8th. And if you would like more information about that, why don't you either call me at 530-515-7135 or email Erin, E-R-I-N, at wethepeopleradio.us. And then I can get you – I don't have specific times, otherwise I would have posted them on the web. But get a hold of me if you live in the Bay Area. And then on the 5th, Lord Monckton will be doing a climate change and Brexit. That's Monday, December the 5th from 6:30 to 8:30 down in Yuba City. He'll be in Yreka on December the 6th, and that'll be at 6 p.m. with a pulled pork dinner. It's $15 a head, and it's basically sold out. So you ought to get cracking on that if you want to go. And if you don't have access to the web, just give me a phone call. It's 530-515-7135. And I don't think I need to say it, but if you call me in the next hour, you're going to get my machine because we're going to be on the air. So
you can't answer the phone and be on the radio.
I know. People are going to do it. I know they are. So I just want to put
about ready for a trade in. Boy, that's just.
Just want to put that disclaimer out there. It happens all the time. Okay, we have Randy on the line who has a question for Lord Monckton, and far as I know, Randy's not going to hang up on your be weird in any way. All right, hit it, Randy. a lot of pressure here.
Thank you, Erin. Hey, wonderful guest, jolly good show, rebutting the lies, and what else can we do to tell the truth? The message from the other side is demoralizing. It's everywhere. It's backed by money. And, me and many others recognize it, but what can we actually do on our level to counteract this lie? Take my message off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Randy. Okay, Lord Monckton. So the regular folks out here who are not scientists and not crunching data, what's a good tool for them?
What can they do? I think was the question he was asking, and it's a very good question that Randy asked. That it is exactly the right kind of question. Don't just leave it to the likes of me, because everyone can make a contribution to making sure that the truth is heard. And so what I'm going to suggest that Randy and others who want, first of all, to know what the truth is about climate change should go to a website called whatsupwiththat.com. That's whatsupwiththat.com. Whatsupwiththat.com. Anthony Watts is a formidable meteorologist who runs this website. It is, in fact, the most popular climate website in the world, on both sides of the debate. It's won multiple awards. And Anthony is a real class act. And what he has done is he's got a website which every day has four or five right on point news stories giving you the latest information on the state of the climate debate. And what Randy can do, and anybody else who may be listening, who wants to make sure that the truth gets more widely spread, let them know that this remarkable website from Anthony Watts, whatsupwiththat.com, is available. And it has this daily news update with four or five cracking good stories written by experts in the field. And it has won an enormous viewership. I think they've now had approaching a quarter of a billion individual hits over the last few years. It's an astonishing enterprise, and it is the best way to get the main points of fact and the main points of science. All of these things are discussed, and also debunking some of the sillier claims of the climate alarmists. So the best thing you can do then is to go onto this site, which is written for a reasonably intelligent layman. You don't have to be a scientist to read it. It's quite clear and well written, and very well supervised and edited, and there's some very lively discussions in the moderated discussion panel below. And unless you're a tiresome left-wing troll who's trying to cause disruption, in which case they have ways of dealing with you very firmly. You can have a really good discussion with others to share your views and ideas. So that's the first thing, to get yourself acquainted with how the science and economics of climate are developing from What's Up With That. And then tell your mate, you know, if you're in the pub or in the bar and you're shooting pool or whatever, you can just talk to them about it if it happens to come up in conversation. And then you'll be well armed with at least the basic facts to make sure that those who are preaching doom and gloom very profitably, I call them the profiteers of doom, are put firmly back into their box. The science is moving very, very much away from the original dire forecasts of doom. I mean, if you go back as far as 1990 to the first assessment report on climate change produced by the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, they were predicting that global warming by now should have been almost 0.8 Celsius degrees. And actually, it's only been a third of a Celsius degree, so well below half of what they had predicted. And so people are gradually realizing this, that yes, the weather is a little warmer, and we would expect it to be, because that is what the greenhouse gas theory would lead us to expect, that you would get some warming. But the notion that we would get a lot of warming is now pretty much discredited, because there have been so many papers in the peer-reviewed literature over recent years saying that it's simply not going to be the 3 Celsius plus or minus 1.5 per doubling of CO2 that had been predicted. It's going to be more like 1.5 if you read a paper by my neighbor down in the West Country of England, Nick Lewis. He reckons about 1.6 Celsius per doubling, best estimate. Then you've got Professor Richard Lindzen, who 5 years ago now wrote a leading paper on this question of how much warming we're going to get, and he said it could be as little as 0.7 Celsius degrees. This caused an enormous shock among the bedwetters, and they did their best to destroy his argument, but they failed, because later on that same year, Dr. Roy Spencer, who designed and builds and operates the satellites that measure temperature globally from high above us, he weighed in with a paper together with his mathematician colleague Braswell, and he said that they'd got the cloud feedback wrong, and that therefore, in fact, the global warming we should expect from a doubling of CO2 was actually 0.7 Celsius by a completely different method from what Lindzen used. Lindzen had used the Earth radiation budget experiment satellite data to determine that we wouldn't be getting anything like the warming that was officially said. It wasn't going to be 3 Celsius. It was going to be about a quarter of that. And then, just this, literally a month ago, Professor Will Happer at Princeton sent me a paper by Professor Hermann Harder, which has done a very detailed line-by-line radiative transfer calculation of how much extra warming you would expect from CO2. And what do you think his answer is? By a third distinct method, the answer, of course, 0.7 Celsius degrees. Now, my own forthcoming contribution to this particular problem of what's called climate sensitivity, how much warming do you get eventually per doubling of CO2? And of course, you don't get all of it at once anyway. It takes a few hundred years to come through. Is that I have been looking at the upper and lower estimates of climate sensitivity rather than just the central one. And they have always been very broad. I mean, the IPCC is saying now what the Charney report for the National Academy of Sciences said in 1979, that you're looking at 1.5 Celsius degrees either side of their 3-degree central estimate. And I've always thought that looked a bit weird. I mean, they ought to know better than that if they're trying to tell us the science is settled. And I've found that they've made a mistake in their calculation of how temperature feedbacks are allowed for when diagnosing from the climate models the amount of global warming we might expect per doubling of CO2. And if you correct for that error, then the central estimate, even before you look at the corrections by Lindzen and by Will Happer himself and also by Hermann Hart and by Roy Spencer, even before you make those corrections to the central estimate, the upper and lower bounds come down to less than half a Celsius either side of the central estimate. And that, of course, means that these very extreme high-end predictions of 4.5 or 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 or even just recently 13 Celsius, all of these are based. These high-end predictions of, you know, tipping points and doom and climate catastrophe, these are all based on assuming that this mathematical error is correct when it isn't correct. If you take away the error and recalculate, then the climate change problem disappears. And my paper explaining all this is out for review at the moment with a very distinguished national scientific journal in another country. And once they have reviewed it and published it, and once the world community has had the chance to look to see whether it thinks, along with the reviewers, that we are right in our conclusion, that will be the end of the global warming scare. Bottom line, they screwed up. They got their maths and their physics wrong. Once we put it right, we can see that the only reason for worrying about global warming came from their error. Take the error away and the problem vanishes.
forgot to mention that part.
Boy, there are a whole lot of people that are going to need a new hobby to hate on. How much fun
they are
it?
Indeed. I mean, this one is finished. And so what they've already done, you heard them preparing the ground with this ocean acidification garbage. That, too, is incorrect. And if they try to make a major issue of that, then I'm going to talk to the Trump administration and suggest that what we do is a proper global monitoring of pH in the oceans. It's a difficult and expensive thing to do, but it's far less expensive than the $2 trillion a year that would have to be paid by taxpayers worldwide if the commitments made on their behalf by stupid, goofy governments at the Paris Agreement were implemented. So it's time we really started taking proper measurements rather than just making guesses and calling that settled science. And so we can dispose of ocean acidification as being nonsense. Then they will say, oh, but the resources are running out. Well, of course, the oil and gas they said would have peaked by 5 years ago. Look at it now. Huge quantities of it being found and extractable thanks to fracking, the new technologies for that. A vast new field has just been found in Texas, which they can exploit by fracking. And so that means that peak oil disappears well over the horizon. So they've lost that one as well. And so they're then going to have to get down to sustainable development, which means that all natural resources should come into the hands of the state, which will regulate how much of everything you can have and, of course, take over things like water supplies, as they are doing in California as we speak. And, of course, they're pouring a lot of the water straight into the ocean because, for some reason, that flaco governor, Jerry Brown, thinks it's a good idea to top up the ocean. And what he should be doing is letting it irrigate the land first, whereupon it will filter through and still top up the ocean. But no, he has already laid waste to the whole of Central California, and it's actually quite sinister what he's doing. It's essentially a very large fraud. What he's doing is taking away the water supply on specious environmental grounds, in fact, thereby destroying the plants and trees and all the ranches and farms right across Central California for hundreds of miles. It's just a desert now. Appalling sight. Blackened trees, dead plants. It's just really, it looks as though Satan has come down and blasted it. And what they then do is, of course, the farmers are driven off the land, and they all happen to be Republican voters, of course, and donors to the Republican Party. They are then left bankrupt with their land worthless because it can't be irrigated because the governor says so. Then in come the governor's mates. They buy up the land at fire sale prices, and then they put built development on it. And that's the game that's being played. And I am going to listen very carefully to people in Northern California, where I am in the next few days. And, for instance, I'm going to be at the Yuba City Glad Tidings Church at 6:30 tomorrow, Monday. That's in Yuba City, Glad Tidings Church, and everyone is welcome to come to that meeting. And I want to hear from the residents there and the farmers and the ranchers what problems they are getting with the Californian administration trying to make farming increasingly difficult now in Northern California, as they've already done in Central California. So that's at 6:30 tomorrow, Monday, December the 5th, at the Yuba City Glad Tidings Church. Be there or be square. And then, if you're very quick, you'll also be able to get in at 5:30 p.m. The doors open on the Tuesday, the 6th of December, at Wairika, the Miners Inn, where there's going to be a very good pulled pork dinner. I'll be speaking at 7 p.m. there. And would you believe the cost of getting into that and the dinner is only $15. I don't know how they do it for the money, but you will need to be quick to book, because I understand, as you yourself have heard, Erin, that that's pretty much sold out. So get on there quickly. And if you can't come to the dinner, try to come anyway, and we'll see if we can get you in at least to the speaker meeting afterwards at a reduced fee, because they've got to cover their costs, obviously. And then we'll have a really cracking, packed-out meeting, which is the way I like to have them. And I want to hear from you up there, because I know that they're planning, for instance, to demolish the dams on the Klamath River, which provide the irrigation to farmers and ranchers throughout Siskiyou County up there. And the danger, if that happens, is that you get another large desert where once there was a thriving community with orange groves and trees and crops and plants of every kind growing in profusion, because the land which had previously been desert was now irrigated. And once again, the excuse for this reduction of the Republican voter base among the ranchers and farmers by these hateful communists in Sacramento, led by this lunatic Jerry Brown, and let's call him what he is, he's totally potty, he's out for lunch.
No, you're absolutely right on that. And I think a lot of people don't realize that, what you say about the land grab by the state of California. The state of California already is the largest land owner in the state of California. People don't realize that. And I think what you're going to hear when you go to these northern communities like Yuba City and Siskiyou County is they're not represented by Jerry Brown and the pack down in Sacramento. I mean,
no,
I think it's worse than that. I'm going to be very blunt. I think what's happening is that this is a dishonest political trick to give the Democrats a permanent majority in Sacramento by driving out all the enterprises and businesses and farms. I mean, if you look at the wagon train is now running west to east out of California as big businesses as well as small farmers go under and get out. And Jerry Brown is cheering them all the way. He doesn't care that his revenue base declines as a result of this, because his political base gets stronger, because all the opponents in business and in farming that he would previously have had to deal with, they've all gone. And that's what's going on here. And it needs to be made very plain to your listeners, Erin, that this is what's going on. This is a politically motivated and not environmentally motivated move. They are using the environment as a specious, bogus excuse. And if we just take the example of the Klamath River dams, I've been reading up a bit on this to see what they're proposing to do. You know, immense labor was expended when these dams were built to provide irrigation, and yet still to allow the salmon to make their way up to the Salmon River. And then, of course, you do get periods of drought when the salmon can't get up the river and quite a lot of them die. But that has always happened, and the presence of the dams actually doesn't make that much difference to it.
No, it
I am going to go on a tour of inspection of the dams
to
have a look, because I think they may have made the mistake that was also made by the socialist government in Britain in the 1947 in putting the dams on the longest salmon river in Europe, which ends on our estate in Scotland, in Loch Rannoch. And Loch Rannoch, I used to be able to fish for salmon outside my window straight into the loch. You can't do that now because of these dams. And what they did was they put the fish ladders for the salmon at the edge of the flow. And what they didn't realize, because they didn't understand the science of salmon runs so well at that time, is that you should put the fish ladders in the center of the flow. It's not a particularly expensive change to make. And if you do that, then even in a drought, the salmon will be able to make their way up quite well. And so that's a change which, if they haven't got it right, I will recommend to them, just as I did to the Scottish and Southern Hydro Board, which now controls the socialist dams along the river tunnel. And so we can exchange views on how this should be done. And I think that would be a far cheaper and indeed far more environmentally responsible solution than tearing down the dam.
Well, it's kind of more fun than that.
And thousands of acres of farmland to desert. No. And this is the kind of thinking that Jerry Brown isn't doing, because he's not looking at this on a rational basis.
Well,
looking at this, hey, here's an excuse that we can get the ranchers off the land and they'll be poor, and then we can get their land cheap and do development on it so we can get rich, and there'll be more and more Democrat voters and fewer Republican country voters.
Exactly.
That's what this is all about. It is a naked grab for political power. I believe it to be illegal, both under the American Constitution and under various statutes, including the fraud statute. And one of the things I'm going to do is, if you will all come to these two meetings, which are very, very important in that region, I will listen to what you have to say. And if I think that an international commission of inquiry into the conduct of the Democrat Party in this land grab and the deprivation of water, which they've already done in Central California and they're now planning to do in Northern California, I will set up an international commission of inquiry which will look into this with the assistance of the Trump administration, where, as you may imagine, I have some extremely good links. And we will then, if necessary, make sure that those responsible for the theft of the farmers' land and the destruction of their water supply will be jailed for a very, very long time for outright political and financial fraud, as well as staggering amounts of environmental destruction that they have caused. I'm on the warpath on this one, Erin.
Well, I think that's fantastic, because we've been on the warpath for that for a very long time and done a lot of shows on it, and I do that in my day job as well. I do think the one thing we need to bring back is our shared experience of punishment in the early days of both our countries with the stocks. I think maybe we should implement some time in the stocks.
Appealing, though the idea is of putting Jerry Brown into stocks. I think what we should do
jail is so cushy
is take
now.
Away his present mansion and his rolling acres.
That would be
and
super.
Give him a standard small holding in one of those parts of Central California where he has taken all the water away, and let him try and make a living from that. I think that would be a much better punishment.
Well, he can get his...
Like the Mikado, I believe that the punishment should fit the crime.
Yes.
Yeah. Let him get his water from a 5-gallon bucket.
All right, we better take a quick break, or we'll have all of them at the end.
And when we come back, we've got a caller that has a question as well.
Sorry. Right.
I did want to mention Lord Monckton earlier this hour referenced Anthony Watts and the blog, the website that he runs. That name should be familiar to many of our listeners. Anthony Watts was the weatherman on Channel 12 at KHSL television.
Oh, for many years.
In Chico for many years. And to my knowledge, he's still doing the weather on KPAY radio in Chico.
Well,
in addition to his blogging.
And the site was WhatsUp, W-A-T-T-S, WhatsUpWithThat.net. And
right.
We posted that online.
.com.
Oh, is he a .com?
Yes, he's a
.com. Oh, yeah, sorry, he's a .com.
No, he's a very great man.
Sorry,
it's
50 to 1 is a .net.
I met him in Sacramento when I was doing a presentation on global warming recently. I say recently, about 5 years ago.
Okay.
Outstanding.
Let's take our break before we get way behind on those.
We'll be back with Lori. She has a question. Hang on to that question, Lori. We're coming.
Will do.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my give a damn's
with internationally known speaker Lord Christopher Walter Monckton. He was a policy advisor to Margaret Thatcher, and in 2016, a national leader in rallying the British vote on behalf of Brexit. Obviously an expert on the climate change fraud. So we've got Lori on the line who has a question, and then just want to put this out there. We got to make sure we get to the Brexit thing and how that interacts with our politics. So,
of course.
All right. So, Lori, what do you have for us?
Oh, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for having this topic. It's just long overdue. I think if I prep it a little bit and then ask my question, and that might be a simpler way. I'm not sure if the technology here is working sufficiently, but can you hear me?
Sure.
Yes,
and
I can.
And your guests can hear me?
Yes.
Okay, very good. If we can maybe shift gears a tiny bit in going away from the ocean, rivers, and waters and lakes, and maybe go to the air and the sky element. I've been tracking for quite a while. I'm a healthcare provider here in the area, Reading, and I'm just very aware of more and more people being impacted by the lungs, breathing, asthma, allergies, and so forth. And so I'm more focusing on the data that keeps coming in, starting with the CIA, John Brennan, mentioning about geoengineering and climate engineering, and the, you know, the congressional documents, the patents, film footage of these spraying programs. And your other radio guests on the station cover this topic, as well as another radio station, because it's just been so evident and obvious. So if I can ask your guest about where he envisions, sees, or has any explanation for the geoengineering programs and how he sees this affecting our air quality, whether it's the ozone being shredded or the UVB, UVC, the pilot.
Right, certainly. I can start by saying that we can dismiss the notion of chemtrails straight away. The idea that various toxic chemicals are being pumped into the atmosphere in large quantities with a view of increasing the allergies of the population or making them infertile so there'll be fewer of us. All of those are rudimentary. They have no basis. In fact, the world is too large a place, the atmosphere too big a place, for anyone to be able to do that affordably on any scale. However, there have been moves to do weather modification on a local scale. Of course, these began with putting silver iodide crystals into the air to try to precipitate the formation of clouds in areas of extreme drought to try and get rain to happen. And it has had mixed success and is very expensive, but only on a local scale. Silver iodide, of course, isn't very cheap. Then there are the more recent discussions among the climate extremists who want to get budget for ever larger and more grandiose and more ludicrous projects, such as the idea that what we should do is have 2,000 barges costing about $200 million each, which would go around the oceans and would pick up the salt water and spray it up into the atmosphere as particles to try and shade us from the sun and counteract the terrible warming which they expect to get from CO2, which, of course, as I said in an earlier segment of this program, we now know they've overstated that very substantially, so we don't need to worry about that. So far, that project, run by a guy whom I know slightly at the University of Edinburgh, I ran into him at the Royal Society of Edinburgh a few months ago, that hasn't got any funding. I don't think it's got a little funding, but it's not going to go anywhere. One thing I think they might try to do is they're already tampering with the quality of the aircraft fuel. Because, as you know, when you see an aircraft going through the air, you see this enormous trail of white coming out behind it. Now, that is not, in fact, a chemtrail. It's a condensation trail, which happens when a hot engine, putting out its exhaust, goes through air at a certain level of humidity, typically beyond the dew point.
If
and
I may
then
say so,
the persistence
I'm
of that
contrail
will sometimes be very great, sometimes
so
dissipate,
and
that will depend again on the local atmospheric conditions. But what is being done is an attempt to put things in the fuel to try to increase these condensation trails, again, as a way of providing a sort of shadow from the sun. And there have been some attempts to do that by using sulfur as an additive, and that would certainly have allergenic effects. However, I have a monitoring station for the atmosphere on our estate in Scotland, and so far no trace of any particulate matter that you would not expect normally to arise from an industrial civilization can be found. So although there may be some local reasons for that to be different at other atmospheric monitoring stations, as far as I know, if you were to survey the monitoring stations around the world, you would not find any systemic change in the composition of the particulates that are getting into the atmosphere, which would suggest to me definitive proof that this is certainly not yet being done on a global scale. It needs to be watched,
but
I don't think it's yet a problem.
Okay, Lori, we're not going to have the chemtrail debate here this morning.
I'm not talking about chemtrails. I'm talking about geoengineering, and I'm talking about pictures I take and video I take.
Okay. Well, you're quite right. The geoengineering in particular, this business of trying to create further clouds. There have been suggestions of that, but again, the expense is formidable, the results are dubious, and the necessity is nil.
There you go. All right. Thank you for that. Okay, can we let's move on to Brexit, because that's a big topic. We haven't really covered it at all. And how does that connect with the election that we just had? Because it all seems...
Well, of course, there is an enormous overlap between what has happened in Britain and what has happened in the United States. Here you have two countries, both democratic by their tradition, both English-speaking, both freedom-loving, and both wanting to break free from the tentacles of collectivism, or totalitarianism, communism, fascism, socialism, call it what you will. People have got fed up with the news media, which of course were largely captured by Marxists following the Second World War, and they've now got a more or less complete stranglehold over the mainstream news media, and they were more or less ordering the voters to vote against Brexit, and they were ordering the voters to vote against Trump, and they failed. And my goodness, they're whining now. I sometimes watch a bit of CNN or MSNBC, and the blubbing that's been more or less continuous since Trump was elected is fascinating to see, and does no credit whatsoever to the hard left, who are represented by these ghastly stations. What is a delight, of course, is to watch Fox News, who are like the cat that got the cream, and they're really thrilled. And they, too, have noticed, indeed all these stations have noticed, the link between the propensity of the British voters to break free from the European tyranny by clerk, whereby 30 commissars, most of whom I couldn't even name, let alone recognize, have the sole right to propose the supreme laws that apply not only in Europe, but also in Britain. They override our parliament. If our parliament says no, they still get inflicted upon us. That's why we want out, because we don't elect the commissars, who are the only people who are allowed to make the supreme laws of Britain and of Europe. And that the same phenomenon is now at large here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to you, Erin, and to people like Alex Jones, all the big broadcasters who have used the freedom of the airwaves that you have here. We don't have it in the United Kingdom. There's a ghastly body which supervises what we say on the air, and they will only allow the hard left to broadcast. They won't allow anybody else to do so. We are fighting to change that, but we haven't got very far yet. But here you have the freedom of the airwaves, and as a result, there are powerful influences like Fox News, like Alex Jones, like you, who have kept the flag of freedom alive. They have kept the ideals of the founding fathers alive, and those ideals are very similar to the ideals of those of us who voted for Brexit. And indeed, I've been campaigning and working for 40 years for Brexit. So that this happened in my lifetime is a great delight. I had always hoped it would. And now it looks as though, although the government will try its best, as will all the opposition parties except for UKIP, to stop it, I think we'll get our Brexit, and I think you'll get your Trump. I know that there are various recounts going on, and the Clinton campaign, again, very sour losers, are not prepared to accept the result of the election, so they're trying to overturn it, which is quite ironic, because when Mr. Trump was asked during one of the debates whether he would recognize the result of the election if it went against him, he said, well, I'll reserve my position on that, which got the left very annoyed. And now here they are challenging the result of the election, having sneered at him for saying that he might do so. What I can tell you is that having spoken since I landed in the United States on my present trip to some senior police investigators, there is widespread concern among the police at voter fraud, and almost all of that voter fraud is being perpetrated by Democrats. And it's on a very, very large scale, and the Trump victory would almost certainly have been considerably bigger were it not for that fraud. But there is this link between populism, which is the sneering term that is used by the left for this emergence of center-right, freedom-loving policies again in both Brexit and in Trump. This is a very significant development given that how unexpected it is. I mean, if you look just at the election of Trump, for instance, here you had all the mainstream media except for Fox in the tank for Obama and Clinton. Then you had the entire sort of left-wing bureaucratic establishment in the government itself entirely in the tank for Clinton. Look at the vote in Washington, D.C., the most revealing figure in the entire election. And that was 93% of the bureaucrats who infest Washington, D.C., that swamp which now so badly needs to be drained again as it was drained originally to allow the nation's capital to be built on it. That swamp, 93% of these ghastly little bureaucrats voted for Clinton, and only 4% voted for Trump. And the same phenomenon in the United Kingdom, where the entire bureaucratic class, and very nearly the entire governing class, entire politicians as well as the bureaucrats, were solidly in favor of preserving this ghastly dictatorship in Europe and imprisoning Britain in its clutches. And what this movement on both sides of the Atlantic represents is a reminder that the ideals of liberty that your founding fathers died for are still alive and well, thanks to you and others like you, Erin, in the hearts of the people. And we are not going to be overridden by collectivism, totalitarianism, or any such movement. We will be free. We cherish our heritage of liberty. It is through liberty that we got capitalism and free markets, all of these. The word free market is a hint that that too is a libertarian concept. We want these concepts now to live as they have never lived before, flourish as they have never flourished before. Wondrous it is in this day to be alive. This is the day when two great men, you had Trump on this side of the Atlantic and Nigel Farage on the other, perhaps the most successful politician in British politics since Margaret Thatcher herself. He almost single-handed and without even having a seat in the British House of Commons, has managed to overthrow the entire miserable left-wing, grasping, greedy establishment and to assert once again the will of the people. And one almost is tempted to quote one of my favorite quotations from that great address given by your 16th president on a corner of the battlefield of Gettysburg, where he prayed that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. His vision has now been realized on both sides of the Atlantic, and God bless us all, we're going to get our freedom back.
Very well said. Now, what we're hearing on our side a little bit now is that the Brexit may not happen as more and more opposition
Well, they're saying it's going to take too long for it to happen.
Yeah, it's going to be too expensive.
Blah, blah, blah.
But what's the real feeling? I mean, are people still behind it?
Well, the people are very solidly behind it. Of course, the establishment is trying to pretend that the people are changing their minds. Well, I don't think they are. And I think if they were to try playing silly boogers and delaying it until the next election and then saying they're going to make the election an election about Brexit, and if you vote for any of the establishment parties, you'll be voting to reverse the Brexit vote. That's the kind of nasty tactic that the bureaucrats might try to do. Then all that happens is that the United Kingdom Independence Party would become the largest party in Parliament by a very long way, and we would make sure that Brexit happened immediately.
Right.
Actually, what the governing class is trying to do in Britain, which is still sort of totally wedded to this ghastly European dictatorship, which is collapsing anyway because the euro is a complete basket case and is in fact now in terminal decline. It will not last very much longer. So the European Union is going to collapse of itself anyway, but we are free of it before it collapses, which always gives us an advantage in being able to build up our economy before that happens, whereas they will all go under. But what I think they're trying to play it long. But if I were doing this, I would simply give immediate notice under Article 50 of the EU Lisbon Treaty that we were going to leave in 2 years' time, and then simply fold my arms and sit back. We don't have to do anything once we've given notice. We just leave. And then people say, oh, but what about all the trade agreements? Well, it's very simple. We're in the World Trade Organization, which governs free trade between us and Europe, and that is a higher level of treaty than the European treaties themselves. The Europeans can't put up tariff barriers against us any more than Mr. Trump could put up his vaunted 35% tariff barriers against Mexico if businesses started to transfer there, because he too is governed by the World Trade Organization. He knows this perfectly well, of course. He says it because he knows it's going to be appealing. But they can't do that to us. And therefore, we have nothing to negotiate, effectively. We will just go. We will then unpick and remove as many of the European laws as we think are no longer suitable for us. We can do that in our own time over the next 20 or 30 years if we want. There's no hurry. But what we can do is just get out of having to pay for this ghastliness. I mean, it's £150,000 million a year. If we didn't have to pay them that, part of it is in direct payments, and the other is the indirect costs of the huge amounts of totally unnecessary regulations about how straight a banana can be and how bent a cucumber can be and how many bits of peel you have in your orange marmalade. I mean, all this ludicrous stuff, which is all that the EU really seems to spend its time doing. There were the regulations on the export of duck eggs in the European community are 30,000 words long.
Oh, wow.
It's just utterly absurd.
It's even dumber than it is here.
Break free of all this. And of course, the cost of complying with all this turgid crap, I forgive my French, but really, it's enormous.
Turgic,
and
I like
so
that.
All we have to do is just break free of this nonsense by giving them notice, waiting for the 2 years we're required to do under the treaties, and then we're gone. And nothing else needs doing between us and Europe, because the trade between us and Europe is already governed by the World Trade Organization. That's been sorted, fixed, move on.
Nice. Hey, we've got to take one quick break here before the top of the hour.
When we come back, I think a lot of people have forgotten here. A while back, there was quite an email scandal in Britain over this whole climate change thing. Can we touch on that just a little bit when we come back?
I'd be delighted, yes.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Bill's burning question will be answered in just 2 minutes. This is We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Theme song of the left.
Yep. No, that's a theme song of the right.
Was it bitching and crying?
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of crying going on. Hey, so we had mentioned earlier, there was quite an email scandal over there over this whole global warming thing that really kind of got dusted over and went away because it really didn't seem to have much impact on the whole global warming scheme, but can you refresh everybody's memory on what that was all about?
Shortly before the Copenhagen Climate Conference of the UN in December of 2009, there was, in October 2009, the release of several thousand emails that had been hacked from the server at the University of East Anglia in Norwich, in England. And the University of East Anglia is one of the two universities in England to which most of the budget for climate change research goes. And in particular, they maintain there part of the Hadcroot temperature record, which is the global surface temperature record. And they maintain, I think if I'm right in remembering, they maintain the land part of the record, and the Hadley Center does the sea part down in Exeter, not far from me. And so this outfit, Professor Jones, who was he was the leading professor maintaining this database at East Anglia of temperature changes, he had been in email exchanges with all of the 24 scientists, bad scientists, whom we had been following, and we knew these were working together to, putting it bluntly, to pervert the science, so as to suggest that there's a far larger problem with global warming than actually there is. And eventually, people began applying under the Freedom of Information Act to East Anglia University for copies of the underlying data from which Jones was compiling his data set, because they reckoned that he was tampering with it. And he then began writing to his fellow members of this small clique of 24 scientists around the world who were and still are driving the climate scare, because most other scientists wouldn't bend evidence in this way. And he said to them, I am very upset that people have found out there's a Freedom of Information Act here. I'm going to destroy my data rather than giving it to any of these people who want to try and catch us out and show that we're wrong. Now, as an abuse of the scientific method, it doesn't get any better than that. It's also actually a fraud against the taxpayer that has paid for this data. And there were then, when all this came out, of course, there was an enormous scandal, and it did have a big impact. It actually was one of the leading factors in derailing the attempt to get an equivalent of the Paris Treaty, in fact, a much worse equivalent of it, at Copenhagen, because at that time the UN was planning to establish a global government, and the word government actually appeared in the treaty draft. And they had put the treaty draft on an obscure UN website. So when they eventually got the treaty in Copenhagen and set up this global government, and then the likes of you and I started shrieking about it that we hadn't been told, they would say, well, it's been on the website all the time. And so they were caught out. And the ClimateGate emails frightened everybody, and it did shake the air of moral superiority, which until then the extremists had, and they've really lost that ever since. And now people are not quite so minded automatically to agree with this clique, you know, people like James Hansen, Michael Mann, Michael Schlesinger. I mean, one can name, there are only two dozen of them, really. These are the ones who have been producing, in my opinion anyway, science which is bogus and arguably bent. And these emails reveal that these people were talking to each other. I appear a number of times in the emails. Michael Mann in particular describes me as a charlatan. And so if I'm going to call him a fraud, and he can sue me if he likes, and I'll sue him for calling me a charlatan. And call it even Steven. But of course, the fact is it's he that's the charlatan and the fraud. And I am trying to do honest science in the papers that I publish. But there was a big scandal, and as a result of it, Jones had to face a committee of the House of Commons, which questioned him on the whole rather ineffectually. And then there were a dozen, I think, must be getting on for a dozen individual inquiries into this. And I can tell you my experience with one of them. There was a bureaucrat called Sir Muir Russell, whom the government of the day reckoned it could trust absolutely to find the correct result, which was that these scientists, who had obviously talked of bending and destroying data, had really done nothing wrong, and this was perfectly normal scientific discourse. And on the day when his inquiry was announced, I wrote to him, I got his email, I wrote to him, I know the email got to him, I said, I want to give evidence to your inquiry, because I had a certain amount of background on this, which I could have given. Anyway, I heard nothing for months, and so I emailed again and said, I have heard nothing, but I had expected to be called or to be asked to submit a statement to the inquiry. And they said, oh, you're too late. Oh, and that was how handy. They treated everyone who tried to get on their list. So they were able to come to that inquiry without having heard any evidence.
Nice.
By this trick, they managed to turn it all away. And all of these whitewashes were operated in a similarly outright dishonest fashion. so as to pretend there was no real problem with what Jones and his colleagues had done. In fact, if you read the emails, it was an outright scandal. Kevin Trenberth, another of the two dozen, had said, well, actually, we don't see global warming happening very much, and I can't explain why. But, of course, they weren't saying any of that publicly.
Well, Lord Monckton, Bill and I are looking forward to meeting you tomorrow up in Wairika. And, hey, just in case you were worried that our earlier caller, who was all wounded, was off doing yard work, he's not. He's busy sending out missives. Arm-length missives, complaints. How could we possibly have you on the show? By the way, we...
They all do that. They're not prepared.
We're excited.
To face anyone who knows the evidence. He tried to tell you the oceans were acidifying.
Yeah.
I asked him two simple questions. It became plain to him that they weren't, and he put the phone down.
I know.
I mean, that's pathetic.
It's just
and that,
fun.
Unfortunately, is the depressingly low standard of debate that you get from the true believers in the new religion. They are simply followers of the Communist Party line on climate, and they simply cannot brook any dissent. Well, sorry, they've got the money, the power, and the glory, but we've got the truth, so they've got nothing, and bye-bye.
All right. We got to jump.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming on. It's been great. We need to do this again. We got so much more to cover.
We will.
Well, it will be a pleasure. Just to remind, 6:30 tomorrow at the Glad Tidings Church. I'll be speaking there. That's in
Yuba City.
Be there or be square. And likewise, on the following day, December the 6th, Tuesday, if you come, you can't now get into the dinner. It's sold out. But if you come at 7 p.m. to the Miners Inn in Wairika, then that'll be after the dinner. That's when I'll start speaking. And I will try to make sure that you get into that meeting. If you can't get in, don't worry. I'll hold a very brief town hall meeting outside the venue before I come in and give the main talk.
Thank you very, very much.
And hear something of what I have.